so much and do their best to raise their children. And I think that that's a wonderful thing, that we do strive so hard to provide the best for our children. But I think it's also important that we can be a bit fair on ourselves and a bit realistic, because it's not as if we have to be perfect to be good parents. We can slip up in different ways at different times and still be good parents.
So how do we measure that we're doing okay? What are the most important things when it comes to parenting?
Okay, well, I think the main thing is, I suppose, there's a couple of main areas. One is we want to provide some kind of relative safety and security for our children as they're growing up. So they basically have a feeling the world's relatively safe. But we also want to assist their development in different ways and help them grow and develop as people in ways that that enhances their skills and strengths in different ways. So I think a lot of it's about providing that safety, and there are different ways of doing it, of course. Mm. If children are infants, or if they're, say, teenagers, for an infant, what we're looking to do is to help the infant comfort them, their needs for, of course, food, physical comfort, stimulation, all the rest of it. But from a positive psychology point of view, what we're aiming at is to develop that, what we call secure attachment, where there's strong bonds of love on both sides, and it comes across when the baby and the parent, they're smiling at each other, laughing, hugging. There's that real attunement, there's that real interaction between baby and parent. And that really helps the baby develop and feel the world is a safe and secure place, and that they're good.
And even though some babies can be really challenging if they have issues and they cry a lot, but generally little babies are pretty easy to love, aren't they?
Absolutely. And fortunately, they just sort of draw that response from us, don't
yeah.
they? But I can certainly remember having a newspaper clipping on the wall of our kitchen when our child was about 7 or 8 weeks old, and it said how the peak of infant crying was in about 8 weeks. And I was glad to see that, because I didn't know if I could tolerate much more.
But I think it gets harder, because when they start asserting their own little personalities and, you know, testing you out, and I gather that's all part of the learning process, but that I think is hard, where it does get challenging as a parent.
Absolutely, and that's where it can start pretty young, can't it, with infants and young toddlers looking to test the boundaries and push the limits, and that's certainly so often the case with teenagers. But if we think about that, that's part of how they're developing themselves and their sense of safety, of how they can influence the world, how they can be most effective within themselves, how they can find a balance of what they want. What better way of doing that? And what better way of learning to deal with painful emotions and conflict than to, if you like, test the limits in their own homes with their families with whom they feel that greatest safety and trust, if you like.
See, that's a very positive way to approach it, isn't it? And consider that this is all part of their learning, that they have to try it on.
Absolutely. And just say for an infant, if they're in a high chair throwing food all around, it's not just that the parent is looking to clean up the physical mess, it's also the parent helping the infant managing with the overwhelming feelings of rage or distress, frustration that can go with that. And by doing that, it's helping the infant learn that they can have these painful, uncomfortable emotions and express that, but it doesn't mean that they're unacceptable.
We are talking with Chris Mackie, our positive psychologist, this afternoon about parenting, basically from infants to adolescents. Now, if you've got any of your own personal challenges or experiences to share, we'd love to hear from you. 1300 303 468 is the number to call. 1300 303 468, or send a text message to 1972 842. Chris, if I could share a very recent experience with a certain kinder boy that I know very well. Little Mr. 5-year-old has troubled his mum deeply this week. She got a call from the kinder teacher saying that kinder teacher is concerned with this little certain 5-year-old's behaviour. She asked him to behave and he turned around and burped in her face. Is this mother a failure, Chris?
Well, it doesn't seem to be the most serious of transgressions, does it?
So, look, you don't want to be getting those calls, though, from the kinder teacher. You do feel like, I mean, what are you supposed to say? It's like, oh, I'm really sorry. What do we do about it?
Well, it's tricky. I suppose, again, it's a matter of trying to get a balance, isn't it, between setting limits and establishing, you know, what's acceptable or not with behaviour. But we also want to have a bit of flexibility, a bit of give and take at some level as well. And often we're trying to sort of weigh up those different things. And I think often there's no exact or right or wrong answer for how we should handle situations where children cross the line. But if it's something which is clearly more serious, they're hitting other children or doing something that's clearly harmful in a certain way, then it needs kind of stronger limits. If it's a milder kind of transgression, if you like, then maybe sometimes we can have a little bit of flexibility and maybe not overreact.
I don't think the kinder teacher was looking for, oh, come on, let's be flexible reaction. The kinder teacher was looking for, what are you as the parent going to do about this sort of behaviour?
Yes, and that was a situation of, sorry, it was burping in the...
Well, I gather that this certain five-year-old, he likes to try it on, Chris. He is yes. known to be a little bit out there. But
yes.
as a parent, I guess it comes back to that point that you think, oh, goodness, am I failing? Have I not been attentive enough? Is this just the beginning of the downward spiral for some horrible wild child?
Okay, well, look, I think one thing there is that we do have some ways of parents of establishing somewhat effective limits. And sometimes a child who shows some kind of, if you like, naughty or difficult or problem behaviour, there'll be a number of behaviours at times that go with that, and that adds to our concern. But at least having some effective ways of setting limits, which sometimes involve time out, like if a child misbehaves, being prepared to take them to their room or separating them from others for a period of time so they realise that they don't get to engage in all the sort of, you know, fun things that are happening, or they're sort of briefly isolated for a period of time if they do misbehave. So it gets across the idea there's some expectations on their behaviour. And if they cross that line, then there'll be some action taken. So I think that... I think it is important that we've got some effective ways of also showing at times if a behaviour is inappropriate. And for younger children, that might be a time-out procedure. Certainly with teenagers or older children, then we can certainly express feelings and it can be appropriate to show some anger, concern.
I think that's when it does get really challenging. You do have a certain control still over younger children, but when you have teenagers who, you know, they might even be taller and bigger than you, standing up to you and just ignoring you or being rude back to you, that as a parent must be incredibly difficult. You can't tell them, just go to your room.
Absolutely, a lot more complicated there. And I think, again, if we think of what develops sort of that security and attachment, like that expressing positive feelings or positive emotion on both sides, which happens with, say, babies and maybe younger children, when it's at a teenage stage, then teenagers aren't necessarily putting it too high on their agenda, expressing that positive emotion at home. And so I think part of it is that first of all, recognising it's going to be part of a teenager's job description to test out the limits in different ways and look at their ways of dealing with conflict and painful emotions, again, in that relatively safer setting. But I think one of the main things is that, especially if the teenager's engaging in some risk-taking behaviour around alcohol, drugs, other kind of risk-taking behaviour, or otherwise is acting in ways of treating others poorly, that certainly won't pay off in the long run. Fair enough for parents to be very clear, parents, grandparents, others as well at times, to be clear in expressing where that line is crossed, but looking to have some kind of direct, robust discussion about that, but being really clear on where that line is crossed.
Chris Mackie is with us, psychologist, and we're taking your calls, 1300 303 468. Philip's up near Yarrawonga, and Philip, you've got one of these troublesome adolescents, have you?
I do. Good afternoon. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes, Philip.
I'm looking for some positive reinforcement for myself. My daughter, who's 15, very strong, and refuses to tidy her room, and I feel as if I'm letting myself down and her by not reinforcing the things that she should do, but it causes so much conflict. And I don't know which way to turn.
It's so hard, Philip. Go on, Chris.
Listen, just refuses. It's my room, Dad, and that's the way it is. And it literally is like a bombshell.
Yeah, what do we do, Chris?
Now, Philip, you mentioned she's around 15. Now, generally at that level, what we'd look to do is leave a little bit more scope, if you like, with teenagers around things like room cleanliness. But I suppose there are a couple of things I'd look at this point, Philip. Generally, when teenagers are getting around that level, a lot of what we look to do is to negotiate them with them a little bit more. It's not just a straight out establishing some kind of limit with them or whatever. Sometimes parents would leave a bit of license for room to be less tidy in some ways, but what they might have some kind of system that if the, say, clothes aren't put in a certain kind of wash basket by a certain kind of time, then they won't be washed in particular ways. Or otherwise, there can be ways where if a teenager's not prepared to consider the parent's point of view, then the parent might be a little bit less inclined to necessarily drive them places as readily as they might expect. Or things like that. But just in terms of cleanliness with a room, often we suggest giving a little bit of extra leeway on that particular issue, so there's so that the teenager has that sense of if you like, some autonomy in their own space.
But it's important too, isn't it, Chris, for Philip to appreciate that he's not failing his daughter. Because the room is filthy, that doesn't mean that you're failing as a dad, I'm sure.
Absolutely. That's a key kind of thing. I think the main thing with teenagers is that we show that that interest in listening to their views as well as making our views known, looking to set limits in certain ways ourselves. But getting back to this idea of sort of failing or whatever, I think it's worthwhile looking at the issue of good enough parenting.
Oh, I like that. You happy with that, Philip?
I am indeed, and I certainly take on board that I guess we've got to put some barriers around it, and I think the taxing around will work well, so thank you.
Yeah, good enough.
Good luck with that then, Philip.
Good enough parenting. Chris, I'm all for that. I think we are just so hard on ourselves, aren't we?
Look, I think very much so, and there's a child expert called Winnicott who talked also about the idea of mended failures, and he said that part of parenting is about mended failures, meaning that we will fail as parents, even of our infants. We won't always be attentive or there when they're hurt or hungry or whatever, but if then we respond the next time, or eventually we respond, then the child learns that, well, the world mightn't be completely predictable and safe in every way, but eventually things get sorted out.
Let's talk about when, as a parent, then you do slip up. Perhaps you've lost your temper, you didn't act as you know, you weren't as controlled as you would like to be. What's the best way to come back from that? Do you just forget it and move on? Is it appropriate to come back and sort of ask for forgiveness from your children if you've overreacted to an incident?
I certainly think that, and I certainly think that one of the signs of positive relationships is if something does go off the rails, we're not happy about that, we have some attempt at repair. And whether it be parents or whether it be as marital partners or any relationships, close relationships, if we feel we've slipped up in some way, be able to acknowledge that and in some way make some attempt to repair the situation. That's one of the key signs of healthy relationships.
Although I guess by the same token, you don't want to be losing your temper every second day and buying your child a gift or trying to then, you know, win their love back again because you've overreacted.
Exactly, and I think that's what part of the repair is also making some further efforts. If a parent feels that they're losing their temper a lot more than they would wish for, then really looking at developing some further strategies to manage manage that side of things as well. But I think the thing is, if we're still looking in our own ways, doesn't have to be perfect, but we're making that attempt to find a balance in setting limits, but some flexibility and not beating up too much on ourselves in the meantime.
Brian's on the line in Coro, and keep the calls coming, 1300 303 468. Hello, Brian.
Hello, how are you going?
Good.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, how are you? Good.
Good.
This guy with his 15-year-old daughter that won't clean her room up?
Yes.
Yes.
Pull the purse strings in.
No pocket money.
Oh, to trade off.
Yeah, I think that was sort of what Chris was saying, that you remove some of the privileges that they see as important.
Yes, but that's certainly something that can be that can be looked at. It's part of that idea of helping people understand that there's give and take in different ways. And that helps them learn that there's give and take with relationships down the track. And again, I think the main thing is if we look at some way of applying that, but also some level of flexibility as well. But I think that'd be fair enough in certain situations for parents to consider that as well.
Brian, are you talking from the book of experience? Have you raised a couple of kids?
Oh, I've got two daughters, 13 and 14, and works quite well with them.
Yep, so it's part of their responsibility. They earn that pocket money by keeping their rooms tidy.
Yeah, and it's sort of school excursions and, you know, dad, the I need to go to the disco, or I need to have that room cleaned up.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Chris Mackey is with us, positive psychologist. If you want to tell us about your woes at home, family issues, 1300 303 468. Another one that I think a lot of people face almost on a daily basis, Chris, and I don't know if it's just boys, but getting kids off to school and off to bed at night, it's just this disorganisation. You're always finding last-minute things that they need to attend to when you're just about to walk out the door or it's time for bed.
Absolutely, and I think that's one that that certainly can be a real struggle. Something that some families would use at times is the notion of, say, beat the buzzer, which is having a certain time by which certain things are meant to be ready, and there's some buzzer that goes off, and if the children are ready by that particular time, then there's, again, some sort of, you know, reward or encouraging things happening. If children aren't ready by that certain time, then there might be less of, whether it be television viewing time or whatever it might be, or otherwise seeing that they have things ready the next day before watching a certain television program, whatever it might be. But believe me, we have a few struggles in our household on that one as well. And I think part of it is recognising that it tends to go with the territory a bit, I think, of parenting children around a wide range of ages.
The other difficult challenge, Chris, is going through the different stages, because they do seem to change so rapidly. You just think you've got it all sorted and they're into another stage.
Yes. And look, I think part of that, again, in terms of good enough parenting is just looking to be attuned ourselves to the stage that that they're at, recognising that say children around middle childhood, primary school age, a lot of it is going to be having quantity time with them, not just quality time. Using those opportunities to play with them, spend time in different kind of ways. But then there is a time when, entering teenage years, they are looking for that little bit of extra independence or space to themselves or whatever, and recognising how some of that is healthy in them developing their own identity and being attuned to those shifts and being able to give some that as well. I think that helps, rather than, if you like, taking it personally if the teenager seems to be more distant or difficult in some ways.
John's in Seaspray on getting daughters to keep their rooms tidy. This is clearly a big issue. What have you done about it, John?
Oh, it's a big issue, all right. Yeah. I've raised six children.
Oh, well done.
And I've got 15 grandchildren who spend a lot of time here.
Then you could be running this segment, John.
Absolutely.
Correct. Yeah. But the first thing and the only thing I would do is make sure the door's shut.
Yeah.
What you don't see doesn't hurt you.
Well, I like that.
Well, it's the only... I learnt this about, I reckon 30 years ago off the ABC one night coming home from work, where we had terrible trouble with two daughters in keeping their rooms tidy. And the advice given on that program was shut the door. What you don't see won't hurt you.
And I guess that fits with Chris's theory of, you know, good enough. You don't have to
exactly.
have everything yet.
Exactly. And it is their space at 15.
Yep.
That's the thing as well, John, as you're suggesting. That's an example of giving them a little bit more of that independence or autonomy. And so, you know, especially when children are a bit younger than that,
exactly.
Understandably the parents might make more of an issue. But in a number of homes, people might say, well, it's a different thing if a door's open and can see the like mess down a corridor. Mm. But if the door's shut, then that can limit the kind of negative impact for the rest of the family.
Well, if you don't know what you're talking about after six kids, and how many grandchildren, John?
15.
Oh, look, could I send mine around to you? You'd probably be able to sort my boys out for me.
Oh, no problems. But let me tell you that the wheel has turned.
Yes. Yes.
My daughter's now married with children of their own. Their houses are spotless.
Right.
Oh, there you go. Yes.
I feel guilty because when they come to our house, our rooms are messy.
You must just quietly chuckle to yourself.
I do.
Yeah.
I love it because I get the grandchildren, I send them home spoiled, rotten.
Good on you, John.
All the get back at those children that we raise.
Good on you, John. And Chris, we'll leave it at that. That's a nice point to leave it, but there is an important lesson there, isn't there?
Absolutely, Cathy.
Take it easy, relax, don't be so hard on ourselves.
And no doubt many of the grandparents are listening are in a position to help their children in different ways, and, whether it be different stories or suggestions, but more than anything else, just that support and help helping their children realise that it is a struggle, and just keeping in mind that even with good enough parenting, that their children and grandchildren can grow up with a sense of relative security and develop to their
good
potential.
Chris, thank you. It's a terrific pleasure having these positive psychology segments each week, so we'll look forward to seeing what we can come up with next week.
Great then, Kathy. Thanks very much.
Good on you. That is Chris Mackey. It's 28 minutes past 3.
Tonya Roberts.
Ellen, what can I ask what your